This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Their faces are beginning to appear on a website of missing children. Sometimes there's a name and an age. Sometimes they are merely identified as unknown female or male. These are the kids who got lost in Hurricane Katrina or the chaos of evacuation. Trying to reunite them with their parents or other relatives is a monumental challenge. But there are others as well. The children who survived Katrina witnessed more than children should: the terror of the storm, the violence and sheer misery of its aftermath. Now, as officials struggle to meet their basic needs, they are also preparing to help them with the emotional scars and to get them back to the normal rhythms of childhood, including the start of the new school year. The children of Hurricane Katrina is the talk of the nation. Do you know any families who have been separated by the storm? If you're an educator, is your school district taking in any of these displaced kids? What can be done to help them? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Markita Garner-Gautreaux, Assistant Secretary for the Office of Community Services in Louisiana's Department of Social Services. Her office has been busy helping displaced children relocate their families, and she joins us by phone from her office in Baton Rouge. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Can you give us a sense of how many children have actually been separated from their parents, from their families?
Lynn, the numbers are remarkably small, and we're very surprised. We have had less than 40 children come through the center here, which is the main staging area. Now, that doesn't mean that that's all there are. We are having hundreds of calls coming in through the 1-800 the lost number that we're running, but what we're finding out is that many of these children are separated from their biological parents, but they are attached to an aunt or an uncle or someone in their neighborhood or some kind-hearted soul that just kind of grabbed them up in a shelter and said, stick with me until we find your family. So they may not be with their parents, but they're not truly unaccompanied.
But still, the parents, we are seeing on television a sort of frantic picture, parents of sort of pictures of kind of frantic parents trying to find out where their kids are.
Exactly, and we are working diligently with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They are the world-class experts that do this kind of work, and we've called them in. They've been here since the day after the storm, and they are the ones that have the missingkids.com and 1-800-THE-LOST, and we're working side-by-side in our shelter and taking pictures of children. We have people on the ground in every shelter, in the Red Cross shelters, taking pictures of children, talking to parents, identifying with parents, and making great links. We just placed three children that have been with us for several days. We just found their parents in Texas just literally about 3 hours ago.
Oh, that's great.
And so we've had some remarkable, very heartwarming and touching stories in the midst of this tragedy, and that's truly about the only bright spot right now.
Yeah. How did this happen? How did these separations occur? Was it in the storm itself, afterwards? Do we know?
It was mostly during the rescue efforts itself. The helicopters were taking out the young and the frail first. So children were being loaded on choppers and brought to a location, and parents were being told the chopper will be back after you. So the next helicopter that would come would pick up the parents, but it might take them to a different state. Most of our reunifications have been between Louisiana and Texas, where parents were taken to Texas, but children were brought here to our staging area. And so it was just simply a matter of getting people out the fastest that we could in the midst of the fury of the storm.
Yeah. Are the kids able to give you reliable information about themselves, their names, their ages, things that help you locate the families eventually?
if the children are old enough, then, of course, we have our social worker, child welfare workers on the ground interviewing them, and they're very polished and very well trained in how to interview children and how to establish rapport and get information out of kids. So we have that happening, and I'll give you a good example. We had a little girl that we had had for several days that we could not identify, and we took her picture to post it on the website, and she looked at her picture and said, "Gabby." And so then we knew she was Gabby. So we were able to post her picture with her name, and her mother found her, and we made that match in Texas. We also had, Gabby was actually part of a sibling group of seven children that belonged to four different mothers, and the oldest child in that entire group was 5 years old. So he was able to tell us that a couple of the kids were his cousins, and unfortunately, he knew nicknames of cousins.
Mm-hmm.
We're using every means that we have at our disposal.
Now, as I understand it, as of this morning, you had 12 children in your shelter. Is that correct?
We had 12, but we've just placed three.
Right, okay.
And they are headed out. And then we also have another, we have a lot of sibling groups that may not, I'm using sibling loosely. They may be cousins, mm-hmm. but they are related. And so we have a group of three that we placed just about 3 hours ago, and then I just got word right before coming on the air that we have two more that we have placed. So we are, we're down to just a few now, but we also have word that we have more coming in.
Uh-huh. And will is there a possibility these children will have to be sent to foster care at some point, or?
We're trying not to do foster care if at all possible, and we're working very closely with the other states that are sheltering our children. What we are doing is still disaster relief, and we are trying to place these children as fast as possible with their families without having to take them into foster care. But, of course, if we are not able to make those matches, then some of these children will end up in custody.
And just in case we have any families listening, where can they, that need this information, where can they go to find out about missing children?
We would love for them to go to missingkids.com or call 1-800-THE-LOST. There are multiple numbers out there. Many people have posted different numbers and different websites, but these are the premier ones that we're trying to channel everything through.
Thanks so much for joining us, Marquita.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate the help.
Marquita Garner-Gautreaux is the Assistant Secretary for the Office of Community Services in Louisiana's Department of Social Services, and she joined us by phone from her office in Baton Rouge. And we're joined now by Dr. Diane Treadwell-Deering. She's the Chief of Psychiatry and Psychological Services at Texas Children's Hospital and an assistant professor at Baylor College of Medicine. Both facilities have been providing help to the evacuees at the Astrodome, and she joins us now from her office in Houston, Texas. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a bit about the work that you are doing at the Astrodome with the children who are there.
Well, in the Astrodome, that's where the children and families are staying. In that complex of buildings, there's another building called the Reliant Arena, and this is where the medical clinics are set up, as well as a pharmacy and some medical equipment for x-rays and blood tests and other medical testing. In those clinics, families are bringing youngsters who have medical or psychiatric problems or behavioral issues, and that there are a variety of professionals from our facility as well as community practitioners who are participating in caring for these folks. And we're trying to have 24/7 coverage of the clinics that are there in the Reliant Arena.
What kind of shape are these kids in psychologically? They've been through an awful lot. Just watching it has been terrible, but to experience it and at such a young age, are they truly traumatized, most of them? Or
I think that that there are a variety of ways that they're presenting. It depends on whether or not they've had the fortune of being with family members and how those family members have been able to help them cope. And so a variety of them really come with a different set of experiences. The more they were exposed to traumatic events during the storm and during the days after the storm, the more difficult experiences they're having now. Getting some food and clothing and shelter and a place that seems safe and some routine is really helping.
Okay, we're going to take a call now. We're going to go to Mary Beth in Louisville, Kentucky. And I just want to remind listeners that we are talking about the effect of Hurricane Katrina on young children. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. Mary Beth in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I just picked up my son from the carpool line, so I'm still moving. My question is this. I am an education student at Indiana University Southeast, and this has come up in conversation since Hurricane, the appropriateness of discussing what I know my own children, I have three children, what they've seen on television. Could we speak to the appropriateness of discussing this with young children and how best to approach it?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. One of them is I think that we need to monitor what our children see on television.
Mm-hmm.
Just as in past disasters, we realize that replaying some of those disasters over and over and over again and exposing children to those are not very helpful and can in and of themselves be traumatic, so that we need to monitor what our children see. The news that we would like to watch as adults is very different from the information we need to expose our children to. I think it's very important to watch the information, watch the media with our children, and allow them to ask us questions. I think oftentimes youngsters pick up on or develop concerns that we don't exactly identify readily. And unless we're talking to our children about, well, what did you see and what did you think, we may misunderstand the kinds of concerns that they have. And I think that helping youngsters understand what they're seeing is a very important task for a parent. Trying to explain and point out all the adults who are trying to help the children, to take care of them, to make sure they're fed and clothed and sheltered, making sure that children are finding their families. And I think this is one of the things that children are very, very frightened about, is what if something happened to me and you weren't there to take care of me, Mommy? I think that's at the heart of many, many children's fears, and that's a specific aspect of this disaster that might well be frightening to a lot of children.
Thanks so much for your call, Mary Beth. Dr. Treadwell Deering, if you'll stay with us, we're going to take a short break, and when we return, we will continue our discussion about children affected by Hurricane Katrina. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away. We're talking about the youngest evacuees from Hurricane Katrina's devastation. If your family was displaced by the storm, how are your kids coping and what are you doing for them? If members of your family became separated from their children, we want to hear their stories. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK and our email address is totn@npr.org. Still with us from Houston, Texas is Dr. Diane Treadwell Deering. She's Chief of Psychiatry and Psychological Services at Texas Children's Hospital. Dr. Treadwell Deering, do children react differently to these kinds of traumatic circumstances than adults? Is it harder on adults or kids?
Well, I think it's equally hard on both children and adults. It's just a different set of worries and concerns that youngsters have versus adults. And youngsters definitely have different ways of trying to cope with disasters and trauma, and they have different abilities to understand the trauma and different ways of manifesting those kinds of anxieties. So, you know, a young child obviously isn't worrying about what's going to happen to mom or dad's job or you know, what are the tax implications or how are we going to replace the Christmas ornaments. But young children do have significant worries, one of them being around safety and separation. And that's one of the most concerning things for these youngsters who unfortunately have been separated from family members. I think that youngsters can often get through a variety of distressing situations if they're accompanied by a safe, comfortable, competent adult who can guide them and support them through that event. So youngsters who've had to manage this without that really have been, in a significant trauma.
And I understand that some kids, you've seen some kids this storm has triggered a psychosis in them. Is that correct?
Well, I think that there are some of the youngsters who have been very vulnerable to a variety of disorders prior even to this storm. Many of the folks who were evacuated through the Superdome and have come to the Astrodome were from families that were unable to pull together resources to evacuate or did not have resources for other kinds of help from family or friends. And so many of these youngsters were pretty vulnerable to begin with. That they may not have been in stable settings with the kinds of things that we expect young children need to grow and develop well. And then if you add an additional trauma on top of that, again, the kind of response would be more extreme and more severe. So I wouldn't necessarily think this trauma alone would cause someone to become psychotic, but if someone were vulnerable to that kind of disorder, this kind of event can trigger those kinds of symptoms. And so we have seen some adolescents who have had these kinds of responses.
A lot of kids are going back to school today. What about for these children? Are they ready for school?
Perhaps they're not ready in the sense that they've got a lunchbox and their school uniform and notebooks. But I think that as soon as possible, these youngsters need to be in a school situation. School is a structure. It's something that's safe and comfortable and normal. It's the job of children to go to school. And I think as soon as they can get into school settings, this is going to provide a great deal of relief and comfort for them. Perhaps they're not going to participate and perform in a way that they might otherwise, but school is a very, very necessary help and aid for school-age youngsters who have gone through this kind of disaster.
Let's see if we can just get one call in here before I know you have to leave, Doctor. Let's go to Sandra in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a children's author and a visiting author to schools and educator, and I wondered what your expert would think of this. I got the idea of getting children here in Ohio particularly, to write to school children in, say, Mississippi or New Orleans, and saying, we're out here, we're thinking of you. We would like to collect some school supplies and send them out to you at the same time, and that, and maybe even sending clothes and things like that. So I've kind of started an effort to have children write to other children, just expressing, the desire that they're being recognized and that they know that people care for them.
I think that's a fantastic idea for the children in the Gulf Coast area, as well as for the youngsters that you are helping to reach out. I think that's a wonderful idea that will bring benefits to all involved. I think it is important for folks to know that other people are thinking about them and caring about them, and I think youngsters really enjoy that opportunity to communicate with other youngsters. It really brings a lot of normalcy. It's a wonderful way of helping the youngsters in your area feel like they're helping and taking care of each other, and it really promotes the ideas of community spirit that are really important not only for children but for all of us as adults as well. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Well, okay. Thank you. That's what we were hoping. And if people in Ohio are listening, they can join the effort by going to maxandannie.com. That's where we're kind of organizing it from.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Sandra.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye. And I know I have heard of many of these efforts locally as well. A lot of people are just doing what they can. Many, many volunteer efforts geared towards the children of this storm.
I think that it's wonderful, and I can't encourage it strongly enough. One of the things I hope we all remember is that the debris from this storm will be cleaned up. Some of the impacts and issues for these children will continue, and we really want to remember them not just over the next couple of weeks, but over the next months and years.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us, Dr.
Thank you.
Dr. Diane Treadwell-Deering is Chief of Psychiatry and Psychological Services at Texas Children's Hospital, and she joined us from her office in Houston, Texas. In a moment, we're going to talk about school for some of these young survivors of the storm. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-989-8255. And I'd like to take a call from Glenn. He's in California. Hi, Glenn.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I'm calling from the Bay Area. We just got back last night after 3 days in the Houston Astrodome, part of a group with some companies that donated some computers to reconnect people.
Uh-huh.
As far as children go, we didn't see, of course, anyone under the age of 10 that needed to find anyone. Most kids were with a parent or with a family member, but there were a few between the age of 10 and 18 who were on their own. Not that many, but... to try to reconnect them was our main goal, and we had some good successes. But
how'd you do it? What did you do?
Well, we were part of a group with Yahoo and SBC and some local Technology for All (TFA) in Houston that donated. Well, we had about 100 computers in the Astrodome, about 50 in the center, which was across from the parking lot, and got online and searched databases, online lists. To reconnect family members, looking for children, of course, who were at other centers or even in the Astrodome with us.
Wow. And did it take a long time, or was it a fairly easy? Sounds like you're making it sound like it was a fairly easy process. Was it? Or?
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh.
No, initially, I mean, the lists were very small. They were not connected. You would have to search each list one at a time. It could take up to 30 minutes to an hour to try to make any progress. But our main goal on Saturday was just to get them on as many lists as possible. During the process, we were working with Yahoo, and they were able to create a search that could actually scan each of these databases, each of the lists. That includes MSN, that includes FamilyMessages.org, the Red Cross. There's a local newspaper in New Orleans that could be searched. And so by Sunday, actually by today, they were having many successes of reconnecting people.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call, Glenn. Interesting story.
Absolutely.
And thanks for your help for all those families that needed it. Thank you. Just down the coast from the worst of Katrina's damage, the school district in Mobile, Alabama, is trying to cope with an influx of families and children displaced by the storm. Harold Dodge is superintendent of the Mobile County Public School System, and he joins us now from his office in Mobile, Alabama. Thank you for being on the show, Mr. Dodge.
Thank you for your time.
Give us a sense of the situation that your school district is facing now.
Quickly and overall, we have 102 schools and about 65,000 children. Almost 50% of our schools have faced significant damage. We believe, as of this afternoon, that we just hit $35 million worth of damage.
Hmm.
We pre-qualified. I guess maybe we're in this business too long. We pre-qualified contractors, had them all ready, and as early as Wednesday morning, we started letting emergency bids. So we're basically trying to button our schools up. We will be out 2 weeks. We are hoping to open back Monday. We are one school away from full power.
So you have buildings down, and you also need to absorb some of these children who have been evacuated from other school districts.
Right, and that's a problem for us. We have visited five Red Cross shelters today and found just less than 100 children. That's not the issue. The issue is that the children have come across the line from Mississippi in large numbers, maybe several thousand. And they have spread themselves among churches and relatives and kin. So what we will do tomorrow is that we will meet with our principals, then we will open all of our schools. We'll open on Monday, but tomorrow we'll have principals and registrars at every school, and we adorn a media blitz, in fact, with the local media, and now your great help, where we're saying walk to your closest school, let us get you registered, and let us get you in. Displaced children are qualified as homeless, so there is no need for immunization. You know, in a catastrophic storm, the last thing people think to do is take their children's shots records with them. So all fees are waived. So the doors are open, welcoming signs are going up everywhere, you know, in inviting these children in. So we don't know how big the bear is we have to wrestle, but we do believe it's very big.
All right.
So, one of the cruise ships, the Holiday of Carnival, is now being converted as we speak to a shelter. That will be about 1,800 people. We'll try to enter that ship today or tomorrow and try to get a head count for the children. We're real interested in what we heard before. Our approach is to try to keep the families together in a school rather than dispersing them to schools of lower enrollment. We believe if there's any way, even if we have to overcrowd a school, that they're on the bus together with their siblings, that they get to, you know, they get to come to school together, they get to go home together. So at all costs, we're going to try to stay away from shifts and all of those things. But that may eventually raise its ugly head.
Yeah. We are talking about children who have been affected by Hurricane Katrina. We're also discussing efforts to provide them with an education at the start of this new school year. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Harold Dodge, if you do have, let's say, 1,000 more children than you were expecting entering your school system, how do you begin to deal with their needs? Do you have enough teachers? Do you have enough classrooms? Do you have enough supplies?
Well, actually, the supplies are an issue. I was a superintendent in Virginia, and my colleagues, my friends in Virginia, are loading trucks as we speak. We have a big church in Denver. There is a church in Tennessee. The local churches are attempting to send in this. What we need more than anything is school supplies, tote bags, and backpacks. The social issues of clothing and food, I'm not in that part. What we're trying to do is this equipment comes in. We'll identify where the children are. As soon as we get the supplies, we'll try to get it to them the first day. We are also probably one of the biggest school systems in the country where our children wear uniforms, which will help families because uniforms, of course, are much cheaper than the latest style. So we have clothing closets at every one of our schools, and when they come in, we'll try to help them with khaki shorts and, you know, whatever color polo shirt that school happens to have.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing also, we see that as a huge psychological issue, because we want those children to feel like they blend in with every other child rather than coming to school with whatever they have on their back. And, you know, that's a true story. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So we're working very, very hard to gather supplies in our central office, which isn't big enough to hold it, but the whole distribution center is tied up. We have board members volunteering, the church volunteering, everybody to pack materials, get it to these youngsters as soon as possible. And I want to tell you, we're going to do everything we can to have this done by Sunday if we can find out where they are.
Yeah.
We now know, which is sort of tragic, because we had a large number of our staff volunteer in Pascagoula this weekend giving out food and water, and the cars were full of children.
Oh.
And our staff said to the parents, look, let us help you with the children. What are you going to do about school? You know, to be very blunt, these families are so traumatized, they just go, uh-oh. Okay.
School, they can hardly think about school right now.
I mean, they don't have a, I mean, it, Biloxi and my colleagues, right, because this is just right across the line.
Yeah.
Their homes are gone completely. They don't have the resources necessarily yet to pack up and just come here. So this head count effort that we're going through with the press between now and Sunday is going to be a good effort, but we expect a second wave when these people come out of this horrific shock and go, oh, my God, I got to get my kids in school somewhere. See,
yeah.
In the Deep South,
if you can hold on for a second, because we're going to run out of time in a minute, and I want you to take a call before you go, if you don't mind.
Do whatever you want.
Rob in Arizona is on the line who has a question. Rob, go ahead.
Yes, Rob Riley. We're actually from St. Gabriel, Louisiana.
Oh, yes.
And off on vacation right now, but I want to know what could be done about locating and utilizing the dislocated teachers from these various areas. I know there's a lot of teachers out there that their schools are gone, not going to be able to go home. So what can be done to locate them and have them come in and assist the schools that are taking in the extra children?
Right. That's a great question, and we're on top of it. Unfortunately, and now we've been in school several weeks. I still had 57 openings. As individuals walk in from New Orleans Public Schools or any of the parishes or Mississippi, we are attempting electronically to work with their state departments, and we're taking those on board right away. I mean, an English teacher from magnet school in New Orleans walked in today, and I think she's gone to work. And we know that at some point we may lose her and she may go back, but that's better than a substitute. Once we can determine if there is a critical mass of children in a school that's overcrowded, we will appeal. We are appealing for federal help now that we can bring on more teachers to lower our class size. For example, K through 2 is 18 to 1. Well, your question, that class may escalate to 30 very quickly.
Harold Dodge, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Harold Dodge is superintendent of Mobile County Public School System in Alabama. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, we're talking about how children from the region are coping with the disruption and tragedy caused by Hurricane Katrina. Claudia Limbert joins us now. She's the president of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus, Mississippi. The school is currently sheltering more than 100 evacuees. Nearly a quarter of them are children. Claudia Limbert, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Lynn.
How are the families that you're sheltering there? How are they doing?
They're very brave people. We are very happy to have them with us because we are trying to provide more of a service to them, especially to the children, than just a place to sleep.
And you have, I think, something like almost 50 children there, is that right?
Yes. As of Friday night, we had 150 people here. About 49 of those were children, from everything from new babies to teenagers.
Now, what are your plans for these kids and school? It's the start of a new school year. We were just talking to the superintendent of the Mobile County public school system. He's getting ready for an influx of children. Are you going to see if they can go to the local school system, or are you going to handle it right there on your campus?
Well, it's probably going to be a mixture of both. I'm working with Dr. Lester Beeson, who is the superintendent of the Columbus schools. Tonight, we're going to be meeting with the evacuees and talking about what they want to do. We have a child care center on campus where we can take the little ones. Dr. Beeson may either ask us to teach these younger kids here on campus, because we have a College of Education and a Center for Creative Learning, and perhaps the high school students will go into the high school. But we aren't sure of that yet until we get to talk with Dr. Beeson this evening. So we're very excited about that. We're also trying to keep the children's lives as normal as possible in abnormal times, keeping them entertained, making sure they have everything they need, that kind of thing.
And are parents eager to get their kids to school at this point, or are they holding back, wanting to keep the kids with them, a little nervous about?
I think part of it is they, some of the ones that I've talked to are feeling very protective of their children, as they should at this point. They really, that gives them a sense of security. That's why we may end up educating them here on campus with our School of Education. But we're sort of waiting to see what happens on that, and we'll know more tonight.
And you have some teachers in the shelter there as well?
Well, we have two Tulane professors, and we have Mr. Bryce Miller here, who's from the public schools in New Orleans, who's a jazz band leader. He's with us.
And he's going to join us now, as I understand it. Mr. Miller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing, Lynn?
Good, thanks. Bryce Miller is the Jazz Studies Coordinator for New Orleans Public Schools. And as you just heard, he's staying at the Mississippi University for Women at the shelter there with his family. I gather you're there with 14 members of your family and a puppy. Is that right?
Yeah, we have our entire family. We all were fortunate enough to evacuate together. So that was one blessing, that we were able to have a little less stress, at least knowing that we were all safe.
Yeah. Do you know anything about what's happening back home, the condition of your home? Or?
Well, we've been trying to stay in touch with the news as much as possible, and, of course, the Internet. Both my parents and my wife's parents, they're actually neighbors, and they're out in the eastern section of New Orleans, and we know that they did lose everything. Their houses are completely underwater. My wife and I, we live in the Carrollton section of the city, which is further towards the Mississippi River and uptown. And what we understand at this point is that they got a little water, but not as much water as the rest of the city.
Now, you coordinate jazz studies for the New Orleans Public Schools, which, of course, New Orleans is so famous for its jazz. Have you been in touch, been able to contact any of your students or other music directors?
Well, I've spoken with a few of the directors that have also been displaced. With one who actually he and his family left to go to Virginia on Sunday evening because they had family out there. And at this point, pretty much everyone seems to just be scrambling to try and start life in whatever means possible, just trying to find some type of placement to move on with their teaching career and also getting their personal kids enrolled in school and going on with the educational process.
And what do you think you're going to do? Are you going to try and teach where you are, get a job teaching there, or?
Well, at this particular point in time, here at the university, between Dr. Lindbergh and the entire community of Columbus, and I mean just everyone, they've welcomed us so much here, and they've really done everything that they could do to help us kind of take our minds off of what's been happening. And as a professional jazz musician, I've had the privilege of traveling the world, and I've never been immersed in a place where I've come across so many gracious people a day in my life. And being a professional jazz musician, of course, New Orleans is my nucleus for that. Being jazz studies coordinator, I'd ascertained a pretty good reputation as an educator and creating phenomenal programs. And in my heart, you know, I've kind of lost those things. So it's kind of telling me that through circumstance, maybe it's time to just start a new route somewhere else. And at this point, my wife and I have been in deep conversation, and we're really thinking that, you know, Columbus is going to become our home for the immediate future, and that immediate may be 1 year, 5 years, or until our four-month-old son makes 18 years old. But I've never been at a place that made me feel as welcome as I have, and they've really done so much to help kind of forget that, in the essence, we've kind of lost everything.
Yeah. So you're not planning to go back to New Orleans. You're going to try and make it work there.
We're going to try and make it work. I mean, you know, everyone at the university, from the president on down to the student unions and student organizations, they've been helping us out. I'm actually a graduate student at Xavier University, completing my master's degree in administration, and this was my last semester. And there were some phone calls made, and I was able to go over this morning and get enrolled in MSU to do my internship to finish my master's degree. The principal over at Columbus High on Friday, Ms. Kellum, allowed me to do a master class with the music students. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm moving on in with small increments.
I bet you're going to miss the jazz of New Orleans, though, huh?
I'm going to miss it, but, you know, with the welcoming that we've received here, you know, in the center of my heart, I'm hoping that, you know, the residents and the community and the local government of Columbus, Mississippi, allows me to maybe do what I can do to help Columbus, Mississippi become the jazz center of Mississippi.
Wow, that's great. If you can hold on, we're going to take a call. Matthew in North Carolina is on the line. Hi, Matthew.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Well, my question, first of all, is with the federal government having Head Start and so on, how are they going to be involved in educating the children that's been affected throughout the storm and so forth?
Ms. Lindbergh?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how Head Start will be involved or not be involved. I don't really have any way of knowing that. We have a child care center here at the campus. We'll be doing some things there with some of the younger children. I think our meeting this evening will help us get a lot more clear on what needs to be done, because we want to make sure we take care of each and every child to the best of our ability.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Matthew. I'm not sure we can answer that question at the moment, but perhaps if you go online, you might be able to get the answer to that.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Matthew. And just one other question about the children there, Ms. Lindbergh. In terms of trying to get them into school at the start of the new year, what do you think are going to be the most difficult challenges for them, just getting settled into a completely new school environment?
Well, I think it would be the same for any child who's been moved to a new school system, but compounded tremendously by what they have been through and what they've seen. I assume that there's going to be a lot of counseling needed. In the meantime, what we're trying to do, as I mentioned, was try to keep things sort of semi-normal. We've had movies for the children. We've had pizza. We've had barbecues. We've had water slides. We've had just about everything we can to just keep them exercised and busy and physically involved. But they're going to have some psychological problems that they'll need to be dealt with, too.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Claudia Limbert is the president of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus, Mississippi. She joined us by phone from her office on campus there. And we were also joined by Bryce Miller. He's the Jazz Studies Coordinator for New Orleans Public Schools, and he has found refuge in the shelter there. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Miller.
Thank you.